Hello there, and welcome along to this week's Monday Racing Postcast. I'm Maddie Plough. This week's guest, we've got James Stevens. He was at Wincanton on Saturday. He'll be able to give us the inside track on that. We have Tom Collins, who tipped the Betfair Hurdle winner, so he's in fine form. And Graham Byrne from Paddy Power, as always, to update us on the latest market moves. So much to look back on from this weekend. Goshen's back. We had an upset in the Ascot Chase, some Grand National clues at Haydock, international action for Mishriff, David Egan and John Gosden teaming up in the Saudi Cup. And then yesterday we had champs return to the race course and also that Betfair Hurdle too. So lots to dissect. Let's get stuck in the next 45 minutes or so to what's happened. And I think we'll start off with one of the feel-good stories of the weekend, and that was Goshen winning the Kingwell Hurdle. He'd been below par this season. We hadn't seen his optimum, what he showed us in last year's Triumph before he came down so far, and it shook up the champion hurdle market a bit, hasn't it, Graham?
Yeah, it absolutely has shook it up, because Goshen's been a massive mover, as you'd expect, over the last few days. Was 16-1 before the race, then it was trimmed into 5-1, and even that's proved popular with the punters, into 9-2. Interesting stats-wise, only one five-year-old has won in the last 12 years. That was, of course, the tragic Espoir d'Alene. But if you look further back, Catchett did win this race as a five-year-old, and it also won the Kingwell in the same year, so that's a good stat for them. At the head of the market, Honeysuckle has been all the rage as well. That's into 9-4. Epitant 3-1. Goshen now at 9-2, and it's 12-1 back.
Brilliant, and good stats that. They do tend to struggle, these five-year-olds going forward, don't they? But Goshen, he's showed us that he looks like he could cope with it. James, you weren't quite as convinced as some, though, by his performance. Tell us why.
Yeah, it was great to see him back, and it was, you know, really lovely to hear from Gary Moore on the phone after the race, and he's sort of telling us how much it means to him. And you know, he'd been actually riding the horse out in the week in the build-up, so he's clearly got the magic touch. But, I mean, the reason I wasn't sort of so taken by him was mostly by the performance of Song for Someone, who ended up finishing second and a long way clear of a third. He was off the bridle for a long way out, and it was only really a credit to him that he was able to stay on and get third. So, to me, it doesn't look like the strongest piece of form in the world, because I don't think Song for Someone was suited by the track, the conditions, and I don't think he really ran his race. So, while Goshen was brilliant and he was back to clearly somewhere like we've seen at his best, the champion hurdle is going to be a completely different game for him, and I do think he's going to have to take another big step forward if he is going to trouble the likes of Honeysuckle and Epitant.
Yeah, it will be a different game, but this was much more like it. How's he going to fit into a champion hurdle, TC? You'd expect him to be prominent. Do you think he could be in danger of sulking if he doesn't get his own way, or do you just think he hasn't been right so far since we've seen him in the Triumph last year?
You know what? I'm not too sure. He's a bit of a mercurial horse, isn't he? He splits the public. Obviously, a load of people want him to win, and a load of people are against Goshen because they've let him down in the past. He's a tough horse to assess. Look, if you take the Racing Post ratings, literally, that he ran on Saturday compared to the likes of Honeysuckle and Epitant, he achieved an RPR of 167, apparently, in that race at Wincanton. And the best that Honeysuckle and Epitant have achieved are both is 163, Honeysuckle in the Irish champion, Epitant in the champion last year. So I know, obviously, he has to give them weight, doesn't he? So on that basis, you'd say the two mares are slightly ahead, but there isn't much between them at all. So that's the reason why he's up there in the champion market. However, I really don't think he should have achieved an RPR of 167, you know. I agree with what James said. Song for Someone was under pressure from the fourth hurdle. Like, he was not travelling from some way out. Navajo Pass didn't run anywhere near as well as he did at Haydock. He achieved an RPR of about 129 or 128 or something. So he was nowhere near. He was like £30 worse than that effort when he beat Bouvardet. The race just fell apart behind Goshen. Yes, Goshen was very impressive in the end, romping home by 22 lengths. But the ground was very heavy. It suited Goshen. The way the race went suited Goshen. The time was only 4.5 seconds faster than the first novice hurdle on the card. I know that's obviously a big disparity in times, but given Goshen recorded a time 33 seconds over standard and the ground was really bad, like there wasn't that big a disparity between the two races. And Goshen seems to just hang under pressure as well. Like his head carriage, he hangs right and then jumps a bit right. I don't know. I feel like there are negatives there for his champion hurdle chances. However, it is great to see him back. isn't it? Because last year in the Triumph, when everything that happened 2 years ago, sorry, or last year, whenever it was, everything that happened, punters and racing public just want to see this horse win big races. You know, he deserves it after that Triumph mishap. So it's good to see him win at Wincanton, and hopefully he'll play a part in the Champion, although I don't think he'll win.
Interesting. He is a very magnetic horse, isn't he? He's sort of got those characteristics. You say he tends to go a bit right, and he's a strong traveller, and he sort of engages in sort of battle very early on. Where can you see him settling in a Champion hurdle? What do you think that could mean for the protagonists, the likes of Honeysuckle and Epiton? Because he's bound to be ridden forward. Do you think that could even suit the two mares?
Yeah, very much so. I mean, the faster they gallop, the better it will suit Epiton and Honeysuckle, because they've got such high cruising speeds. Now, they're both really versatile horses, I think, Epiton and Honeysuckle, although Epiton hasn't actually been ridden that versatile, or whatever the word is, in recent starts. Always held up in behind the leader and then, you know, trying to come through with a quick burst of speed, like in the fighting fifth. Honeysuckle, as we saw last time under Rachel Blackmore, was given an enterprising ride, and she can do it from the behind, from the front, or anything. I think with Goshen in the field, with likes of Silver Streak as well, Aspire Tower, there's going to be plenty of pace in there. Not so sleepy if he goes for the Champion. There's going to be plenty of pace, and that's just going to suit the two market leaders, I think.
It was quite interesting because I was talking to James yesterday, and we almost said, if there was a false start, it could really disadvantage Goshen, because I think he just wants to get his own way and be prominent. And if, you know, not so sleepy, he didn't get his own way at the next start next time around. So that could be something to factor in, because we do see that on the first day quite a lot. Now, if that was a surprise to you, Goshen winning, then what about Dashiell Drasher winning the Ascot Chase? Grade one action, and surname was very disappointing. It left this horse, who just seems to be getting better and better, for Jeremy Scott and Matt Griffiths to come home in front. He's very brave. He's almost a little bit quirky. He tends to find more when other horses come to him. But this was a great performance. James, could you see this coming?
I'd like to say I would, but I'm not sure. I did have him in my tote 12 to follow, so I was quite happy from that perspective. But no, he's been a horse who's not particularly flashy. He just has really just taken a step forward every single run this season. I mean, the reason I did sort of like him last year is he did run two really good races behind Champ at Newbury. I think the first time he was the second, and the next time he fell or he's unseated or something. And then he only had one more start where he was a very easy winner at Haydock. So he's taken a real step forward every time. He's a sort of horse that just continues to try and just really fight it out. And I know Surname didn't quite turn up, but, you know, to see off Marta Tommy Tucker with some performance, really, he's a progressive horse. He's still relatively young. And you know what? It's brilliant for Jeremy and Matt to have a big winner at Ascot. And I think this horse might end up going to a Ryanair next. And he'll have to improve a fair bit. But look, he's an improving horse, and you can never sort of rule him out on that perspective.
Let's talk about track. Do you think he'll be just as good at a different track? Because we've seen it with Surname and many other horses that Ascot, for whatever reason, can be a bit of a specialist track. And he's done a lot of his winning this year at Ascot. Do you think he'll be just as good somewhere else?
I'm not sure. It's a tough one. I'm not particularly certain that Cheltenham or that Ascot in particular is going to suit him better than other places, because I think at the start of the season, they were talking about how Newbury was a track that he particularly gets on well with. So I'm not quite sure that Ascot is going to be the track for him, and he might not be able to fire elsewhere. He has won at Cheltenham. He won a novice hurdle at Cheltenham at the meeting in April here. So he's got form around there. I think Ascot certainly brings out the best in him, but I wouldn't rule him out and sort of say he can only go at Ascot. I mean, now he's taken this big step forward, he has got to go and prove it elsewhere. But no, I wouldn't rule him out, no.
I think that's fair. Good run from Master Tommy Tucker in second under Daryl Jacob. Ran well and seemed to jump better than he can. Got a bit tired in the closing stages. TC, let's go to Surname now. He was disappointing again. Why?
Well, I mean, that's the question that we're all trying to find the answer to, isn't it? I mean, I think Paul Nicholls said after the race it was something to his breathing. And I thought that as well when he was pulled up, because he was travelling really well and he seemed to get a brilliant rhythm out in front after Dashiell Drasher made that mistake at the first and Harry Cobden was able to take control of the race. And it looked like he was going to be back to his best. You know, he was travelling powerfully and he was jumping well on the first circuit. But then as they crossed the start point for this after a lap, he just really dropped the bit and he just went out like a light, didn't he? It wasn't really like he was challenged and then he just didn't have the speed to continue going. He just bailed straight away and then it was pulled up, stopped quickly. It would be really nice to see like a valid excuse because this horse is so talented. Like he's got so much ability and we just want to see him run to that ability every single time he hits the track. Now, he hasn't done it on either of his last two starts. Both times he's gone out like a light. So there's clearly a problem there. Maybe a wind up. He had a wind up back in 2019, I think, before he tackled Altior in that infamous Christie chase, which probably has ruined both horses in retrospect. But yeah, it was a disappointing display, wasn't it? I didn't personally fancy him. He had so much to prove and negatives next to his name after that run in the King George, I thought. Well, I did fancy him. And the race just wasn't very good either. It was a grade one, the Ascot Chase. But Benny's King came third. He's not a grade one horse. He ran a very good race, but he's not a grade one horse. Master Tommy Tucker's not proven at the top level. Obviously, Dashiell Drasher wasn't until here. I thought Master Tommy Tucker was the best horse in the race. He travelled like the best horse in the race, but he just didn't have the power to go past the ultra game Dashiell Drasher in the closing stages. And I personally think that a switch to Cheltenham or Newbury or whatnot will suit Dashiell Drasher because he wastes so much time and loses so much momentum going left at his fences. Like that mistake at the last was a complete momentum shifter. And if there was a horse in second that was properly rallying and picking up in the closing stages, he would have probably gone past Dashiell Drasher. But Master Tommy Tucker was out on his feet and he just didn't have the power in his legs to go past him then. I think going back left-handed will suit. And I wouldn't be giving up on races like the Ryanair or whatnot for Dashiell Drasher.
What would you do next with Surname James?
Yeah, interesting with him because Nichols,
is it physical or mental, do you think?
Well, Paul Nichols sort of said after the race, says partly down to win, but also the fact that this horse sort of, when he won his races at Ascot in that brilliant season, he was just sort of allowed to roll on and get off to a massive lead. And the others were would ride in behind, sort of hoping he would sort of tire and they could catch him. And obviously they didn't, and he stayed on and won those two races by God knows how long. The thing is now is that people know how to beat Surname. So they're going to press him. They're going to challenge him. And so where he could sort of sneak in a little breather around sort of a turning in or something like that, he's not able to at this point in time. So with that in mind, I would probably give him a long old break, possibly even towards into next season and just try and get him out over 3 miles. I definitely think if he can get out over a longer trip, that might be the way to win with Surname. But yeah, I really hope we see him back because on his day, he's a real top talent. But yes, it's an uphill road from here.
Fascinating insight that. Some cracking finishes at Ascot on Saturday, and most of them went the way of Harry Skelton, who's just in superb form. Brilliant ride on Captain Chaos, and similarly on Shannon Bridge, brave tactics paid off. What did you think of those two contests, Graham? Have we got any market movers from those?
Well, if you just gone back to Dashiell Drasher, he has got a Ryanair entry 16-1 with that, but Jeremy Scott seemed to be pouring cold water afterwards, suggesting that they sort of know they've got a good one on their hands and they're going to take care of him. But remember, we are going non-runner, no better Paddy Power. So if you do fancy Dashiell Drasher for the Ryanair, it's 16-1 with that safety net of the non-runner, no bet. The other ones in the race, Surname is 14-1. It's highly unlikely he's going to go there now. And Master Tommy Tucker is 20-1. Going back to the Skeltons, what a day they had. It was a 320 to 1 treble, should I say, between Midnight River, Captain Chaos, and Shannon Bridge. Midnight River is the interesting one. It's not entered at Cheltenham. Skeltons are looking at Aintree for that one.
That makes sense, I think. Very, very game mare, isn't she, Midnight River, the one I didn't mention. I think you could argue Harry Skelton's among the best jockeys around at the minute, TC. What's changed, do you think, in his style? Why do you think he's having such a good season?
Yeah, he's fantastic, isn't he? He's getting a few outside rides as well. But obviously, Dan has such a brilliant string of horses. And those rides on Captain Chaos and Shannon Bridge, you would think during the race, wow, he's gone too hard here on both of them. But he just seems to be able to get a rhythm, doesn't he, out of his horses. He's a bit like Briony Frost. Obviously, a completely different racing style and aesthetics. But the way he manages to get a rhythm and be in tune with his horses is a real talent that Harry's got. And that ride on Captain Chaos, where he took on Cobolobo from the start, I thought obviously the horse and the jockey just deserved to win the race. It was an inspired ride. The horse gave everything. And look, you've got a feel for Regal Encore, haven't you? The 13-year-old, absolutely flying late and around his favourite track for Anthony Honeyball. But I thought if Captain Chaos lost that, that would be heartbreaking. And then Shannon Bridge, again, looked beaten when Thibault came alongside, which would have been a huge win for Adam West. And Skelton just, you know, the clever move. Again, he brought him over to the standside rail, found a different, changed legs, found a different stride, and Shannon Bridge picked up again. And you know what? There was a couple of interesting horses in behind, and you'll be looking in behind in that race because they went so quick early. Likes of Gladiator Alain, Malaya, they both caught the eye for different reasons. The former was obviously pulled too hard. Gladiator Alain travelled by far the best. Malaya was ridden with extreme patience and moved through the field late. But Shannon Bridge, again, deserved the win. Like Captain Chaos, went out, would have gone out on his sword if he lost, but he found another stride and picked up again for Harry Skelton. He's having a fantastic time.
Yeah, he is. And we have to touch upon really, really sad element to that race. And that was the unfortunate injury to Lammy Surge, who's been a real cult horse in the last couple of years. Grade one winner, has bought Simon Munir and Isaac Suede some fantastic memories, along with Daryl Jacob and Nicky Henderson. And that was really horrible to see. More sad news later on when we're going to review the Denman Chase, but thoughts with their connections and all who were involved with Lammy Surge. Let's move on to Haydock now and talk about the Grand National Trial there. It was full of some progressive horses, but Lord de Menil came out on top, and this was just a real iron performance from this horse. He recaptured some of the form he'd shown last year and clearly likes this track. Do you think he can feature in a race at Aintree, TC?
I don't think so. You know, I think this is his Grand National. He loves this track, as you said. He likes really testing ground. He was second in the race last year after winning the Tommy Whittle. And then this time off £2 higher, there were question marks because obviously he got beaten 12 months ago off a lower mark, but he really bounced back and he just seems to pick up every time a horse comes to him, which is a fantastic trait in a stayer, staying chaser like Lord de Menil. However, he does seem to miss one or two fences. Now, he's a great jumper on the whole, but there was a couple down the back that he was in close to, and he seems to land, you know, right on the front end, so he could be vulnerable round Aintree. I think that the fences, the national fences, may cause him a few problems, but it was a great victory, and Achille was an interesting runner back in second, staying on powerfully. Needs a massive stamina test, that horse.
Good ride from Charlie Deutsch, I thought. He's another jockey I'm a big fan of. James, I'll go to you to talk about the Rendlesham Hurdle. It was won by Third Wind for Huey Morrison and Tom Cannon. Quite a classy performance, this.
Yeah, it was actually. It's never particularly the warmest stairs hurdle trial this race, typically. And, of course, this year, more than ever, it looks a really strong division. But, you know, this was a horse who's clearly taken a massive step forward. I mean, he was put in his place by Paisley Park the last day, behind him and Time Hill in the long walk at Ascot. And then he'd run here behind the serial winner, Main Fact. So he was taking a massive step forward. And, you know, look, he's 7 years old. He's improving. You know, look, he's going to have to improve a huge amount if he's going to tackle the Time Hill and co. But it was a good performance. And I think the fact that Liz Nagar-Oscar ran such a big race also really makes that race at Cheltenham really interesting, because we've got a defending champ who's now back in form. So, yeah, I really can't wait for the stairs hurdle. It's one of the races of the meet for me.
Interesting. And Liz Nagar-Oscar, I think he's a really underrated horse, you know. He doesn't always show his best, but I just think he's such a strong stayer. We can't move away from Haydock before we talk about one of the most impressive performances of the day, and that was of Mon Morale, who won the juvenile hurdle, beating Nassalam. This was a great spectacle. I thought both went at it from a long way out. The winner's not going to go to Cheltenham. Do you think that's the right move, TC? I think Paul Nicholls has, although he's run the likes of Clanders Oba and Frodon in the Triumph Hurdle, he seems to want to avoid it with some of his good horses these days.
Yeah, it certainly wouldn't. It doesn't surprise me. You know, this Mon Morale's only had three starts for Paul Nicholls, four starts in total, including the one in France. He's won all four. He looks a real top prospect. I don't think that race at Haydock was good at all. I don't think Nassalam's up to that rating of 142 personally. But you couldn't fault the way that Mon Morale cleared away from him and, you know, put the race to bed in a few strides under Sean Bowen. He's only a four-year-old. He's owned by Sir Alex Ferguson, John Hales and you know, the like. And, you know, next season and when he's a six-year-old will be the two important campaigns. I think it's a very wise decision by Connections to bypass Cheltenham this time around, because it can bottom a horse, you know. It's like the guineas and whatnot in for the flat horses. They can ruin horses early in their career. And these, jumpers. You want some longevity, don't you? And Monmorel is a horse that we can all look forward to next campaign.
He certainly is. You mentioned the flat there. What about the Saudi Cup then? It was won by Mishriff for David Egan and trainer John Gosden. This was a real slog in the closing stages. He just got the better of Charlatan. You're our international expert, TC. What was your analysis of this race?
I was really impressed with Mishriff because these two horses, the two American horses, Charlatan and Nick's Goat, they are so quick. Like, I'm talking serious speed from the gate, and it's really hard to live with them. And Mishriff did so well just to stay in contention in the early stages and then managed to sustain the effort in the straight. Whether he's the best horse in the race, I'm not sure. I think Charlatan was the best horse in the race. He could be marked up on several counts. And obviously, this is not pocket talking because I actually fancied Nick's Goat. The fact that Charlatan managed to lead Nick's Go was an important part of the race because Nick's Go is by far his best when he's able to roll on the front end. Joel Rosario is a bit of a, what word can I use to describe him? He's a funny jockey, let's say. And Nick's Go is by far the best when he can just go from the front and he just outstays them. He's not a horse that can pick up off a fast gallop that he sets, if you know what I mean. He doesn't quicken again. He just keeps going at a really relentless pace. And Mike Smith was crucial to that. He knew what was going to happen. He got Charlatan on the outside and then passed Nick's Go around the bend. Now, that was the end of Nick's Go. But then Mike Smith made a crucial error, which was going to the rail, which was dead over both days. And you didn't want to be against the rail. And Mike Smith should have known better than that. And Mishriff, under David Egan, who was clearly clued up about that, came wide. And that proved the turning point in the race. Now, whether Mishriff's going to be a player in the Breeders' Cup Classic, which has been tilted as one of the aims towards the end of the season, then... I don't know. Like, I think it's pretty difficult to go over to the US and beat these US horses on their own home turf. However, if they go to the Dubai World Cup, then that's a different ballgame. And Mishriff would be a real player because he looks a proper horse.
It's fantastic, isn't it, to have a horse of his calibre running so well on dirt as well as turf. I think that's a real string to his bow and fantastic that he's still in training. Graham, update us with the prices for Mishriff because there are some about.
Yeah, absolutely. And as TC was saying there, the Dubai World Cup looks to be the target now. Certainly, that's what punters have in mind because it's been well backed 10-1 in to 7-4. It was just a great story, I thought. We had plenty of bad news over the weekend. And it was great to see Johnny Egan out there, out in Saudi, in tears at his son, winning a huge race for David Egan. Fair play to John Gosden for putting him up. Rode a beautiful race, picked him off, coming up to the line. I was cheering him on. I didn't back him, but I was cheering him on because I just wanted David Egan to win it. And great scenes and what was sort of a tough weekend for a lot of people. It was good to see those scenes in Saudi.
It was. Redemption for him, wasn't it, after he was jocked off in favour of Frankie Dettori. So good to see him enjoying the biggest day of his career. Now, last week's show was a little bit quiet. None of that this time around because there was a great card yesterday. Stay with us to hear all about it.
Paddy Power are streaming all UK and Irish racing on our app. No bet required. Just log in and watch. Terms and conditions apply. 18 plus. BeGambleAware.org.
Welcome back to this Monday postcast. We're going to talk about Newbury yesterday now. We had the Denman Chase, we had the Game Spirit and the Betfair Hurdle. Let's start off with the first one I named and a bit of a surprise result here with Secret Investor beating stablemate Calander's Oboe. It was Briny Frost from the front again. This was a good performance, but given the first two aren't going to run in a race like the Gold Cup or indeed at the Cheltenham Festival, what do we take from it, James?
I think we learn a bit more, as we did actually across the weekend, looking towards Duane through more than anything. I think these two will both probably end up in the bowl there. A really interesting race, wasn't it? It was sort of Froden-esque almost, as we can call it now. Tough old performance from Secret Investor. He is a very good horse on his day, though. You know, you go back through his form, there's some, you know, at the start of the season, he was very good under a bit of a big weight at Chepstow on that first day of the season. And he had some pretty good form before. I know he went over to Ireland, didn't he? And to Down Royal at the start of the season there. He's a horse who's very good when he gets his conditions. He wants good ground. And so a Gold Cup probably isn't ever going to be his race. But if he gets his conditions at Aintree, he's certainly one to consider. And look, he's a quality horse and another one for Paul Nicholls. And Calander's Oboe, I thought, was a little bit disappointing. I'm not quite sure if he's been just quite as good this season. I'm beginning to wonder if he's sort of on the down. But yeah, he ran a good race. But yeah, they're both not going to go to Cheltenham, it seems, at this stage. So from that perspective, we didn't learn anything. And then Lost in Translation as well. I mean, really disappointing. From watching it back, the only thing I can sort of hope for, I suppose, in a funny sort of way, is that maybe it was a bleed and it's something, it's a, you know, a legitimate excuse, because he did jump really well that time. Not as fluent as we've seen him before, like when he went at Carlisle and such, but it was a bit of a promise. It was a step in the right direction. But yeah, he's got an awful lot to prove if he's going to finish there in the Gold Cup again.
Indeed. And cheek pieces could be next for Klander Szobo. Do you think that will help, TT?
I agree with James on, I think he's slightly on the downturn. Look, he maintains most of his ability. He achieves an RPR of 173 there behind Secret Investor, if you take that literally. I mean, that's a good performance. And Bryony Frost really stamped her mark on Secret Investor. First time riding the nine-year-old, and, you know, it was a typical Bryony ride. And hopefully that will get her some confidence back, because I think she's been riding with a lack of confidence recently. And she looked really confident aboard Secret Investor, getting into that rhythm over fences. And even when he made a mistake at the last, you could tell that Bryony knew there was still a bit in the tank and managed to fend off the stable companion. But yeah, you've got the form again, though. Like, there's a few races this weekend that's just gone that the winners are impressive and they're good stories. But then you look back at the form and you're like, well, does it really make up so much? Because Lost in Translation, just, you know, he blew out again. There just seems to be so many excuses for him. And he's another great horse that's just not producing at the moment. Kalashnikov is a good form bearer, but he's only rated 159. He finished third. Sipaj didn't really like the ground. He was in fourth and he was out of position for most of the race. So it was just the first two. And Klander Szobo was obviously given £6 to Secret Investor. So they were well matched on the weights. I just thought that the story of the race was Bryony Frost was brilliant. And the unfortunate story that the conditional won't be seen on the racetrack again.
Yeah, I was going to touch upon that just now. It was a race that was overshadowed by that for a lot of people. He was pulled up, exiting the back straight first time round, and really, really sad for David Bridgewater and his team. Small trainer, does so well, had the likes of the Giant Bolster in recent years and Wick Hill, and seems to do well with what he gets. And this was just torrid, torrid luck for him and his owner. The Ultima winner of last year, the conditional, will not be seen again. And there was a couple of incidents at Ascot as well. Severano, sadly for Oliver Sherwood, and Yal Tari we lost, as well as Here Comes Johnny at Market Raisins. So it was a really tough weekend on that front, and our thoughts are with all those connections. Now, more promising news, I suppose, for the connections of Lammy Surge, who we mentioned earlier on, was So Royal's win in the Game Spirit. This was great to see. And Daryl Jacob, a jockey who clearly... he can sort of see that this horse means an awful lot to him and to his connections. He had his day in the sun. Let's talk about him, because I don't want to get too into Champ at this stage, because So Royal is very, very good at this level, isn't he, James? And he just did what he does best here in the absence of an Alfie or another real, real top notcher.
Yeah, agreed. He is just a classic case of just below that top table, isn't he? I mean, remember those years ago when he ran in that champion chase and going over the last, he was right there with Altior. But as we've just seen since then, really, he's just always been a step behind. And with no Altior, it was no problem, really. He was very good. You know, he was the only horse I fought, apart from sort of Champ, who was really running a proper race. I thought the others all in behind were disappointed for one reason or another, especially Magic Saint. You know, he's just a proper old yardstick at 2 miles. He jumps well, he stays well, you know, he's got a bit of pace. And at the end, it was that, just that 2 mile of pace almost that just proved the difference between him and Champ in the end. But yeah, he's a very, very good horse on his day. And to be fair to Alan King, he's done an excellent job of him this season, because they went back over hurdles. And I not necessarily think it's a dual purposer, but, you know, he was taking all the weight from him in the elite hurdle at Wincanton at the start of the season. It was a very shrewd bit of placing. But yeah, he's had a fine season and yeah, credit to him.
Indeed. Graham, let's get an update on these prices. So Royal for the Champion Chase and Champ for the Gold Cup. What can punters get about those two now?
Yeah, So Royal, it's easy to forget that he actually won the race yesterday. Was 33-1 for the Champion Chase beforehand. That has been slashed into 12-1. Word of caution, though, Alan King said afterwards he will only go to Cheltenham if it's good or good to soft ground, so that non-runner no bet might come into play in that. Champ, as you can imagine, all the rage, was 10-1 before the race, into 6-1, second favourite now. Album Fall is still 5-2. Champ and Aplu Tara next to 6-1. Then we have Royal Pagaya at 8-1. But Champ, very impressive. It'd be interesting to see what tactics is employed if it does go to the Gold Cup, if it's going to try and make the running. But a fascinating runner nonetheless. But 6-1 now, Album Follow still the favourite at 5-2.
Brilliant. And do you think Champ can win a Gold Cup off the back of this TC? He seems to have been a horse that always divides opinion. Which side of the fence are you on now?
I think he's got the ability. I really do. I think he's a very talented horse. And I personally liked the switch back to 2 miles with him. You see this in America and whatnot, where these trainers give their good horses prep runs over inadequate trips because it blows away the cobwebs. You can see the horse lays down everything it's got at 80% fitness. And as we saw from Champ, after being away from a year, wind surgery, being with Henrietta Knight to work out his jumping, he looked a really decent horse, didn't he, when finishing second to Soh Royale? And I know he bungled the last, but he, on the whole, he jumped brilliantly. And I think going back up in trip now, he's going to be a proper player. Now, if he stays the Gold Cup trip, that is the problem, because I'm not too sure. However, he has the ability to feature in a finish. And I'm not convinced Album Photo's that like a cinch favourite. I don't think he's absolutely sure to win. I think it's a wide open race. I think Aplutard, Manila Indo have got a chance. Champ's got a chance. So I think it was a great move by Nicky Henderson. Give him a breather. Give him a nice run over a short distance first time up, and he'll be ready to go in 3 weeks' time.
Yeah, he's got a lot of stick in recent seasons, Nicky Henderson, but I thought that was a good move and an ambitious one as well, quite a unique one, and we should applaud that. Now, Tom did text me at the start of the show and said, can we just talk about Soaring Glory for the whole thing? Well, we can now. The time has arrived. Take it away.
What a horse this is. God, I absolutely love Soaring Glory. He's one of my favourite horses. Arguably my favourite horse over jumped at the moment. I just think he's a fantastic animal, and Jonjo O'Neill's done a great job with him. I was really hoping at the start of the season that Soaring Glory would be his flag bearer, because he's got a really talented young team, Jonjo O'Neill. They've had a bit of a resurgence and an overhaul in the last couple of years. He had a load of veterans, and now he's got a load of young novice chasers and novice hurdlers. And this Soaring Glory, he had all the ability. He proved the ability in bumpers and in his first novice hurdle win when he beat Brave Man's Game. He's obviously a strong fancy for the Ballymore. And a grade one winner now. And then he finished second to Dusart, and some people thought that was a negative towards Soaring Glory, but Dusart has the ability to be a real top class animal when he comes back. And then he's had two blips after that, and people really were putting water on Soaring Glory and saying that, you know, he's nothing special. But this horse is a 150 horse, no doubt. I thought he was absolutely chucked in going into the Betfair Hurdle, and I was just hoping that he was going to get a fair crack at it, because, you know, in a Betfair Hurdle where there's so many runners, 23 runners, and anything can happen, they were going to go lickety-split from the start. I did just say lickety-split on a postcard, didn't I? you need a bit of luck in races like that. But Jonjo O'Neill was in a perfect position throughout. I thought it was a fantastic ride, a brilliant ride. He was ahead of the main pack where all the hustle and bustle was. He got the horse into a proper rhythm. Soaring Glory showed the ability to quicken up when needed, coming into the straight, got right onto the heels of the leader. And then when the momentum could have gone two out, when he made the mistake, he left his hind legs in the hurdle slightly and landed on his hind legs and looked to lose a bit of momentum. And the likes of 50 Bull and Edward Stone really became players. Soaring Glory picked up again, and he won so comfortably at the line. Like, he achieves an RPR of 146. He's a 150 horse. There is no doubt about it. I think he's a proper supreme player. The likes of Appreciate It are very good, but he's not a 2-miler. You've got plenty of other horses in the race, like Metier. I don't think the form of that Tolworth was very good at all. and whatnot. William Manners has got a couple of others at big prices that are interesting. But I think Soaring Glory has the ability to definitely play a part in grade ones, especially the supreme.
I like that confidence, and I like the angle of an alternative in the Supreme. I know Tom Segal, he doesn't like Appreciate It much either. And as you say, you can link that Tolworth form with Shake 'Em Up Harry, just eighth here. What price can we get on Soaring Glory for the Supreme now, Graham?
Well, I hope TC was in earlier on. He might have got 25-1 before the race. It's been slashed in to 10-1, where Appreciated is the 6-4 favourite. The vibes haven't been great around Appreciated the last week or so. There's lots of people trying to build cases against it. Soaring Glory, the only word of caution I'd say, Jonjo O'Neill says he would want decent ground, which hopefully he should get. But Appreciated, 6-4 favourite. Metier, who was also mentioned there, that's 6-1. Ballyadams, 7-1. Soaring Glory now is next in the market at 10-1. Then you've got the likes of Bob Ollinger at 12-1. Blue Lord, 16. Our old friend, The Real Deal, as well. Let's not forget about him. That's a 16-1 shot also. Bigger prices the rest.
Do you know what? I think he could be a forgotten horse, The Real Deal. I'm sort of thinking maybe on the day, I might get involved there. I'm not sure. We'll see. James, now, this was a great race. There were so many horses involved in the final few furlongs. 50 ball for Gary Moore. He loves this race. He ran a cracker, still looked quite green. Edward Stone, classy horse, ran as he thought, as we thought he might. Annual Invictus for Chris Gordon. He's run, placed some good horses in this race in recent years. And Guard Your Dreams, my word, the ground he made up. From near last to finish sixth was pretty eye-catching as well. Who do you think came out of this in the best light? We must also mention Cadzand. He was 12th, the 11-2 favourite, hung left throughout and never really looked comfortable.
Yeah, tough question that one, Maddie, because there were so many, as you say, but were promising. I would like to first mention on Soaring Gloria, agree completely with everything Tom said, but the only thing I would go back on is that if you look at back at the past on horses that have won a Betfair hurdle and gone on to run well in the Supreme, they have always had a bit of a higher weight than Soaring Glory when they've won at Newbury. So he has got a little bit more to do, albeit he does look like the type who certainly will progress, and I wouldn't read too much into that. But certainly worth considering just when you compare him to the likes of Kalashnikov and co, who've gone on to run well. But in terms of your question, yeah, I think the one for me who I was really caught the eye was Time White. I think I thought he was a really travel into it well, but when sort of push came to shove, he just didn't quite have the sort of class or the ability to see them off. To me, he strikes me as a horse who's probably going to be a very nice novice chaser. I always quite like strong travelling hurdlers going over fences. So he's certainly one that I'll be sticking around more, but more for next season. And Mr. Coffee as well is another one who I thought travelled into it well and will make better on the fence. But no, Soaring Glory was a serious horse, and it wouldn't surprise me if 50 ball goes and runs well at Cheltenham in the county, if that's where they decide to go then.
Yes, I like that. Any other eye catchers, James? As we mentioned at the top of the show, you were at Wincanton on Saturday. Any horses who you want to suggest people should add to their trackers?
Yeah, none from Wincanton, unfortunately. It was, apart from the Kingwell, it wasn't particularly the best of cards for Wincanton, I'd say. I thought the attempts drive at Newbury was particularly good, especially for the time of year, really. Couldn't deny how close it's to Cheltenham. I'm a big Southfield Harvest fan. I thought he ran really well, but Es Perfecto for Alan King, he's a real eye-catcher, isn't he? I'm not sure which direction they'll go with him, but the way he travelled into the race was seriously impressive. And you know, he's a novice who's got loads of options. He's probably still going to be well handicapped, and he'll win before the season's out. So Es Perfecto is definitely one to put in the tracker.
Brilliant. And Tom?
Yeah, I mean, James and I must be singing off the same hymn sheet, because those two horses you just mentioned there, Southfield Harvest and Es Perfecto. I tweeted about Es Perfecto. I thought he looked really good in the race, and he just seemed to hit a flat spot between the last two flights of hurdles and then picked up again in the closing stages. He's a real eye catcher. He'll win races off his mark. Southfield Harvest just looks a weak horse at the moment to me. He's very unexposed, and Paul Nicholls will get the best out of him in the next couple of seasons. And Sizeable Sam, who was fifth in that race is probably going to work out well. The likes of Polish, who won it in Howling Milan, the first two home, they relished the quicker ground. But the third, fourth and fifth, Sizeable Sam will make a brilliant chaser. He's a massive horse and he's got so much ability. He just needs an obstacle, you know, to jump over, and he'll gain lengths and go up the ratings when he's given a fence.
I like that. I like that a lot. Southfield Harvest, he was one of mine to sort of follow at the start of the year, and I agree with you. He looks very raw, doesn't he? But should be a chaser down the line, as they say. Now, will it be last stop for Cheltenham Clues this weekend? We have some really good graded action with the Pendle, Adonis and Dovecote at Kempton, as well as a meaty handicap at the same track and the Ida at Newcastle. We'll be looking at that just after this.
Here at Paddy Power, we want our gambling to be fun and encourage our customers to bet responsibly. That's why we offer a number of tools to help you stay in control, including the ability to set deposit limits, get reminders after a certain amount of time playing, and to take breaks. For more information, visit responsiblegaming.paddypower.com. 18+, begambleaware.org.
So we're going to go to Newcastle now, which is the track at which Saturday's feature takes place, is the Vertem Ida Handicap Chase, and we're yet to see the next entry stage, Graham. So some of these who ran at the weekend will not be turning out again, but Cross Park, you'd think he might do, given that he won it 2 years ago.
Yeah, he's due to go. He is up running off top weight this time. Has been popular enough in the betting 10 to 1 to 5 to 1. The favourite at the moment is Sam's Adventure for Brian Ellison, Tommy Whittle winner. That's been all the rage, really. That's been backed into 4 to 1. Then we have Callum Mad at 9 to 2, Cross Park 5 to 1. Springfield Fox, another one that's popular, 7 to 1. Big River 7 to 1. Cyclop 8 to 1. One I quite like, I've noticed a bit of money coming for, is the Dutchman here for Tristan Davidson. That is into 8 to 1 from 14 to 1, and it is 10 to 1 bar for the Eider.
Shrewd trainer with a good strike rate, isn't he, Tristan Davidson? And this race in the past, it has had an impact on the Grand National. I think Comply or Die was the last Eider winner to go on and win the Grand National. Please correct me if I'm wrong. James, what are you looking for in a race like this? It seems like a lot of the leading protagonists won't take part, so could be some in there off a low weight.
Yeah, I think the thing you're looking for is something that stays and loves a bit of heavy ground. So with that in mind, the one that I'm sort of drawn to is a horse I've been keeping an eye out for a while, because I think he certainly got the sort of profile that would win a race like this. Is Just Your Type for Charlie Longston. He's sort of a bit off and on. You never quite know what you're getting with him. But he's a horse that really handles that real cut in the ground, and he looks like he can stay forever. This season, he's been a little bit disappointing. You know, he did win all right in a race at Utoxeter, albeit it wasn't on their typically sort of really tough ground. But the last day, actually, I thought he really sort of fired back to form, finishing third in Royal Pagels, Peter Marsh. You know, it's a hard race to judge that, considering how good the winner was, but he sort of did everything right and ran his race. He's been left alone by the handicapper. I think he's actually been dropped £4 by the handicapper. I think he's a horse that could improve, and I think he'd relish a real test like this, especially what we're expecting on Saturday.
One to note there then. And from you, TC, what do you make of the Eider?
Well, 4 mile and half a furlong handicap chases really aren't my bag, but I've only just had a look at the decks. However, Big River is a horse that I've often followed and arguably often
You and me both.
Yeah, I mean, he often catches the eye, doesn't he? And he doesn't win too often. I mean, he has won 7 from 23, but in recent seasons, that is since February 2018, he's only won once. And that came at Kelso over what I thought was an inadequate trip. So, yeah, he hasn't been the punter's pal in recent seasons, but he's caught the eye over stamina-sapping trips in the past. He won the rehearsal. Did he win the rehearsal? I can't even remember if he won the rehearsal. No, fell in the rehearsal when I thought he was going to win the rehearsal. And then he also was brought down at Kelso over this trip in the Borders National in 2019 as well. He's dropped back down to a mark of 139, which is probably fair on his ability. Like on RPRs in the past, he's proven he's capable of producing a performance worthy of 150. So mark of 139 is probably fair. It's just that he often catches the eye and doesn't win. That's the problem. But if everything goes right for Big River, if his jumping holds up, if he's come out of the Welsh National fine, he suffered from a bit of post-race heat stress, I think, that day, which was surprising given it was absolute Baltic conditions. But it wasn't the first time that's happened. So providing Big River's like all A-OK and he jumps well, I think he's a player. But it really isn't a race that excites me, especially if we're looking at on Monday when the race is on Saturday.
Yep, we're a slave to these entries at this stage, aren't we? But Big River, he's run well in a couple of Ultimas as well. I always seem to get drawn in by him. Now, Kempton is where most people will be most interested in at the weekend. Loads of graded action, 3 Grade 2s with the Pendle, the Adonis and the Dovecote. So, as I mentioned before, we could get some last-minute Cheltenham clues there. Yet to see the runners on our site as we speak for those. But we do have some runners for the Close Brothers Handicap Chase, and that's the Grade 3 over 3 miles. Now, interestingly, at the head of the wakes, we have Clander's Oboe and Secret Investor. Well, I don't think either of those will be running. But this has always been a very good race. And it's always a good one that punters like to get stuck into, Graham.
Yeah, absolutely. A fascinating race. And of course, you were right. Comply or Die was the last Grand National to win the Eider back in 2008. And this race used to be the old Racing Post, wasn't it? Has had a few Grand National winners in this as well. The likes of Rhyme and Reason and Rough Quest spring to mind as winning this. At the head of the betting here at the moment, and it's a really fascinating runner for me, is Captain Order. It was well fancied last time out when it ran in the Sky Bet, of course, was beat by Token Risks on that occasion. Christian Williams trains. It's 9-2 from 10-1. This one's been all the rage. It's in the Grand National. It's ranked number 70 on the list in Grand National. So we need a few to come out. It's going to get into the big race itself. But it is the favourite for this race. It's 9-2. Then we have Al Dancer at 11-2. Clondalk Castle, 13-2. Double Shuffle. And Talk is Cheap, 8-1. Mellow Ben is a 10-1 shot. Slate House, on a bit of a mission to reclaim its reputation. That's a 10-1 shot. And it's 12-1 bar.
Oh, you mentioned Talk is Cheap. You're definitely going to get my ears pricked up when you speak about that horse. I'm such a big fan. I like him for the Grand National down the line, so hopefully he can qualify for that here. And there could be some similar types. TC, I mean, I'm not sure Al Dancer and Clondalk Castle necessarily are, but that's the beauty of racing, having such a variety of horses in a good race like this.
Yeah, exactly. And the thing is about this race, there's so many horses that people love to follow. You mentioned Talk is Cheap. I'm all over Slate House every time he runs. And
you
are. It's really going to be the moment probably where I desert him and he's going to win by about 30 lengths and then I'll be kicking myself. Clondalk Castle as well. I think he's a really exciting horse. He remains unexposed after just 19 starts. He's a 9-year-old now, but he's not seen on the track too often. He seemed to have quite lengthy breaks and just run maybe 3 or 4 times each season. And you know, he's been running against the likes of Master Tommy Tucker and Mr. Fisher on his last 2 starts in Grade 2 company. He's back into handicaps here. I think he's a real player. Captain Ord's obviously the worthy favourite. He's based on that Royal Pagai form. You know, he's a proper player. He's just his jumping that often lets him down. But he seems to get from one side to the other. He doesn't lose too much momentum, but he does take a hit every single time he jumps a fence. So that's your one word of caution with Captain Ord. But at this stage, it will be Clondalk Castle and maybe Slate House.
And I'm not sure about Captain Order at 3 miles, you know. I think he might just be suited by strong pace back at 2.5 or something like that. James, what do you reckon?
Yeah, interesting point. I think with him, he's one sort of horse that will be sort of happy with the forecast where it's going to dry out all week. I mean, that's probably going to suit him pretty well. To be honest with you, I think his price is only going to get shorter as some of the sort of big names appear to drop out throughout the week. You know, the really interesting horse in the race is Cloth Cap, if he goes. He's coming back off that Hennessy win. You know, after Tiger Roll's disappointment this week, I mean, this could be a serious old player in the Grand National this year, and he could be quite a small price if he goes and runs a big race. So from that perspective, he's a horse I'm most looking forward to seeing this week. And yeah, it's a tough old race. It looks a real tough old race. Can't say I've got a strong fancy this early out.
Yeah, we'll try again later on in the week. But you do have some naps for us.
This will not be beaten.
Yeah, we talked about Mudlarks, and they're going to be even slower in the Devon National on Friday, which is heavy ground, 3.6, a 0-1.35. So it's not going to be anything too particularly fast. A horse I've been following for a little while is called Samuel Jackson. It was 4th in the race last year. Didn't run too badly, actually. He looks a horse that's really, really going to love the conditions. And he's £10 lower than when he was 4th last year. Bit more to prove. Comes here banging form. And yeah, he might be a nice price for Devon National on Friday.
Brilliant. And yourself, Tom?
Yeah, Newcastle tomorrow on Tuesday, the 6:40. It's a 7 furlong handicap. Class 2 event there. There are some really decent horses in there, like the Beat Le Bon, Lord of the Lodge, rated 107 and 100, respectively. There's a horse further down the way. It's called Edrak for Mick Appleby. Now, when he won on his comeback, this Edrak, everything went wrong. After 177 days off, he was heavily punted at Chelmsford at the start of this month. Literally everything went wrong. He was in rear, he broke slowly, he was caught wide, was shuffled back, didn't get the run when he needed it, but he still won by 2¾ lengths off a mark of 85. Last season, he ran at Newcastle on 2 occasions. Now, I tend to see Newcastle as a track that suits specialists. Most horses don't translate their Lingfield and Wolverhampton form there. This Edrak's run twice at Newcastle. One is novice event by 3 lengths and then got beaten by 1 length in a 6 furlong handicap when he just had no luck and probably would have won that day. So the track's no problem. Edrak off £8 higher should win again under Luke Morris.
Okay, so that's Edrak for TC at Newcastle tomorrow, and then Samuel Jackson, for James in the Thank You NHS Devon National at the 3:10 at Exeter on Friday. Well named, I think we can all agree. And that'll be it for this week's show. So thank you to Graham, to Tom, and to James for their insights. Bruce and the team will be back on Friday as usual, so they'll have the more information on those weekend contests. Best of luck and stay safe this week. We'll see you again soon.
Paddy Power Games has over 250 of your favourites to play online, and we're going to attempt to name them all in this 10-second ad before the T's and C's kick in. There's Blackjack, 18+, bgambleaware.org.